would love to call you back just as soon as I can. Thank you again for calling, and I'll talk to you soon.
The mailbox is full and cannot accept any messages at this time. Goodbye.
Greetings, the automatically deleted husband, and a lot of things. I got a postcard. I got one. This came Saturday to Mrs. Dorothy Jane Kozlowski. Lord willing, I'll be hiking to the top of Big Frog Mountain this Sunday with a guy roughly George's age. I'm keeping my promise to you to strive to live to be 90. I love you, I love you, I love you, your man. For some reason, she rejected that. But then there was today, I got another postcard. To Julia and Isaac. Romans 7, 1 through 3. Dialogus offered by me. Love, Dad. And note, I did it to both of them. Because, again, Romans 7, they're married. Assuming Isaac is alive, and I have no reason to not believe that. But you want to know? I got a third postcard. This one was to George. All looks well for our hike to the top of Big Frog Mountain tomorrow. George, I want to make the hike with you. Please, love, Dad. He probably still doesn't know, does he? So lots of things. One thing is Saturday, went to the farmer's market, and on the way back, there was outside Miss Lillian. So I had a dialogue with her for roughly an hour, and I kind of cut it short because it was hot, and I was noticing that it was getting to me. I don't think I ate right before I left. But one of the things I did is I got a photo of her. So that's a photo. And she had the smirk was great. So I'm leaving you that photo. She's 94. And, you know, I told her that I was at the top of Big Frog the previous Sunday. We talked a bit about that. And then we talked about what she did that weekend. She did indeed go to the race in Nashville. And she entered 8 races and came back with 8 gold medals. There was no one else running in the 90 plus category. So she clean sweep, got them all. and apparently she has a photo of her, you know, with all the medals. And I asked her to send it to me. I haven't got it yet. But anyway, it was a delightful conversation. One of the other things I did, because I did mention last week, the video that was done in the 1980s, Silent Scream, and things around that. And again, I mentioned there was a follow-up, Eclipse of Reason. Well, I'll give you the link, because obviously I have it on Kozlowski.org. And, you know, I watched Silent Scream last week. And over the weekend, I watched Eclipse of Reason. And it's gruesome. If you haven't seen it, it's... You know, because you're watching somebody die. This is a snuff film. This is a literal snuff film. But because I've seen it before, you know, I'm familiar with it. I saw it, and yes, it's gruesome and whatnot. But that didn't really get to me. Bernard Nathanson, the guy who did it, and Charlton Heston was the, you know, he did the intro. You know, Moses did the intro, or Ben-Hur, or anyway. Said, well, this is what shouldn't be. And he showed some other examples, you know, starving kids and so forth. This is not what man should do to other men. And then he said, this is what should be done. And he showed several pictures of kids with their families. And that was crushing. It's one thing to watch somebody being literally ripped apart, and to see the joy of families, seeing a dad with his kids, and so forth. And it hurt. I did send, you know, I did do my my thing to Tirza. So it's linked there. I just don't know her. I just don't know her. You know, I think about Walter that, and I really lament, I've said this before, I lament that I didn't bond as well as I should have with Walter. obviously I didn't have no opportunity to do that with Zadok, but I feel I failed with Walter. I should have been closer to Walter. But I also wonder if, compared to the other girls, if Tirza kind of separated from me, and I don't know. But again, my door's open to her. You know, I can't know unless there's dialogue. But you know, I've mentioned it very often. Kevork Elnassian, who does the Syrian analysis, and I'm going to give you two videos of his. One was in February. A gentleman he interviewed, Brad Hoff, he wrote an article for the American Conservative or whatnot, and so he was discussing this in reference to what the U.S. is doing to Syria, and this was just after the earthquake that was, it was at the epicenter was Turkey, but near the border, so huge number of people died in Turkey, and about a third of that number died in Syria. And we're talking tens of thousands. This was a massive earthquake. I think the problem in Turkey is a lot of the buildings had foundational issues, and the foundation collapsed. And so that's where a whole lot of people died. And I don't know how similar that was in Syria, but either way. So there was a discussion about that. And it was an interesting interview because the guy was a Marine, and then post getting out of the Marines, he went to Syria, did a lot of study, writing, and so forth. You know, I think he called it like a second home. He lives in Texas. He is some form of Orthodox Christianity. So he's made that very clear. But last week, the serious problem of Idlib. And I watched that and I thought, okay, I think he did a very good job. One of the things he did is he dropped in a little bit of the Brad Hoff interview in this. And, you know, that was good. And then he dropped in another video that was done in May of 2017. And I have the original there. I wonder about it because the original, if you go to the website it's on YouTube, and of a person, and there's only one video on that site, which is this one. So I'm a little confused about this, but either way, it's done in Arabic and you have English subtitles. And what Kevork did is he basically played virtually all of it and made some commentary on it. And again, this is 2017, so this was a while back, and it's informative because this woman is speaking about a bunch of people who went to the Idlib area. Idlib is the north mostly northwest in Syria near Turkey, and it's where a lot of ISIS and their various spinoffs moved to. And have basically captured the area. And so I have a couple stills from that I'm link you to. One is, and the subtitle is, because they were showing a book produced by the whatever version of ISIS. One of the subject is on how to deal with female slaves. So this is the documentation of what you can do with a female slave. Another is whether the woman is from the people of the book, a Magian or an Arab, it is permissible to enslave her. Again, keep in mind, in the Quran, the people of the book are the Christian and the Jew. Because, you know, the Bible, whether it's just the Tanakh only or with the New Testament. So that's what the Quran speaks about, directly, and uses this expression, people of the book. And it's used repeatedly throughout the Quran. So it's, you can grab these people and use them. And this is not for domestic help. This is for more aggressive purposes. And it's rather disgusting. And you'll find other things where there's the conversation about how so much of the Christian community was devastated and so forth, and captured and left, or things of that nature. But you know, there was a similar thing in Aleppo, and in 2018, I have a little. It's the Syria tourist group, whatever, produced this little short 2-minute video, because, you know, in Aleppo is the citadel. I mean, this is a couple thousand years old, and, you know, a significant structure. And because, you know, a whole bunch of, I think it was the eastern part, I think it was the eastern part of the city, was captured by ISIS, and the Syrian government recaptured it. I think that was with the help of the Russians, if I recall correctly. But either way, they've recaptured the city, and so life was coming back to the city, and they had a celebration. And this is a video of you know, little kind of a PR piece about that celebration. One of the things that I find fascinating about that video is when you look at it, you know, you see Syria. Well, this is a lot of people there, you know, generically Arab, in but, you know, Syria is a secular nation, because you have various forms of Islam, you have a lot of Christianity and other things, a lot of obviously atheist. But you look at that crowd, and what you see is this magnificent old structure, and you see what seems to be like on stage, effectively looks like a classical concert. And the people in the audience are coat and tie, waving Syrian flags. So it's kind of, not, you know, it's, you think of the image of somebody, you know, with the turbans or, you know, whatever. This looks like a bunch of business suits. This looks like it was happening in, you know, New York, which I find fascinating, because I think it violated the cultural norm that we may think of Syria. But roughly that time, there was a, I don't know if I want to find it or not. There was a group of, because a lot of people were being troubled in Idlib. So a stack of buses, well, a row of buses, was filled with families. And then in order to get them out of Idlib and into, I think it was Aleppo, it may have been Damascus, I'm not sure. So there was this convoy. And apparently this was done several times, but it was done with agreement from both sides. You know, the government, the Syrian government, and the ISIS affiliates. So they had this escape, and they were delayed over and over again because of checkpoints and things of the nature. And at one point they stopped. So you had this big caravan. They stopped, and somebody was there to give them. They called them chips, and you know, so from British. So I don't think it's potato chips. I think it's more like bagels or something of that nature. And so they invited the kids alone, not the adults, to come out of the buses and get some food. To feed them. The parents and whatnot had to stay in the bus. And then a car bomb went off and killed a whole bunch of those kids. And they did not let the parents off the bus. And who came to help? The White Helmets, which they're affiliated with ISIS. It was a devastating event. You know, can you imagine sitting in a bus watching your child die? One of those kids, and the timing is amazing to talk about this. When I looked at that young girl, what I saw, because she had so many characteristics, what I saw was tears. You know, I've seen another young guy in East Aleppo who was orphaned. He looked like George. Really looked like George. And there was this girl here who looked like Tirza. I don't know if she survived or not. it really got to me, and that's one of the reasons why I can tell you so much of the event. It got to me. But there's something else that, you know, when you look at the events and the talk about the exit from Syria and so forth, on September 11th, 2018, so this video was done May 15th, 2017, so September 11th, 2018, roughly a year later, there was still a Christian community, not in the heart of Idlib, but I think in the surrounding area, that was constantly under attack. And one gentleman whose home was hit apparently like a year before by a missile and narrowly missed his family. This time, on September 11th, 2018, there was an attack in his community. People came to him and said, go to your home. He went to his home, find his wife, his three children, and his mom dead. I have an interview with him on September 15th, a few days later, by Eva Bartlett, a reporter who actually goes there instead of... His name is Shadi Shada. His photo is right here. He's been on my wall for years. And to have all these things come back really got to me. Again, did I already say? I was reminded by, I think I told Chris, I don't think I said it yet. I very much enjoy the musical Fiddler on the Roof. I have the video. I actually have it on Kozlowska.org. But anyway, and there is a... where Tevye, the main character, is coming. Well, I quoted, he said, "Dear God, was that necessary? Did you have to make him lame just before the Sabbath, his horse? That wasn't nice. It's enough you pick on me. Bless me with five daughters, a life of poverty. That's all right. But what do you have against my horse? Really, sometimes I think when things are too quiet up there, you say to yourself, let's see, what kind of mischief can I play in my friend Tevye? I have five daughters." Anyway, and four sons. But I felt that, always felt that bond. Well, always, when I had five daughters, I found, you felt that bond even more to Tevye. But that line has always sunk into me. What kind of mischief can I play? And I really, because I've a lot of these things got really emotional. And, I look at these things because, what I talked about, for example, Friday was issues around organ harvesting. And years ago, I remember seeing pictures. I don't remember if it was Syria or Iraq. Because I did the thing, Lot, Levites, Yazidis, and because during that time, a whole bunch of people were, we could use them, because we can sell his heart or his lung or whatnot, and they were doing that. And so that happens in those parts of the world, just like, again, it happens at Harvard University. There's, I'm striving to find someone. I'm so pushing to find somebody who says, yes, on this particular area, I want to use the technology and drive it into this particular market. And, one area could be the organ harvesting or whatever. But the objective is to do it where you put power in the hands of an individual. It's a fighting chance for some. Hey, there's a good line. And what it brought to mind is... a voicemail that I'll link you from June 1st of 2022, last year. You may remember the shooting at in Uvalde, Texas. I did some comments on that, and I mentioned Angeli Rose Gomez. She was a mom, went to the school when the shooting was happening. You know, the police said, no, you stay out. She was getting real pushy. They put handcuffs on her. So somehow she negotiated to get the handcuffs off and kind of apparently just casually went away, hopped the fence, went in. And I have a picture of her coming out with her two kids. The police, the government, the ones we could trust to protect us, did nothing. They stood outside while the shooting continued. This mom went in. She had a fighting chance. She went in and got her kids out, and they survived. Those are the kind of people I'm going to support. They exist, such as Mrs. Gomez. There may be someone else in Texas, in Syria, in Iraq, in Ukraine, Donbass. I am so, I've become emotional about it because my error rate is still high. I feel I'm blundering. I did get a little kick in the pants from Chris today, and maybe that was helpful. But there's one other thing, you know. In that voicemail, I also mentioned a video that I found, that I watched, and it's now on Kozlowska.org, so it's there. And of course, the link to the website, because apparently the website, the organization, whatever, has kind of stopped. But so the video is there in case it disappears. Finding the mountain of Moses. The real Mount Sinai is in Saudi Arabia. There was this gentleman, I think I mentioned it in my voicemail, in Kentucky, Wyatt, who did a lot of stuff in reference to, doing the archaeology, and said, no, the popular place in the Sinai Peninsula, where people say, this is where Mount Sinai is, and these kind of things happen, and it doesn't fit. It doesn't fit the text of the Bible. Whereas, again, if you look at the image, especially looking at the satellite image of that area, this, the place that they described, what Wyatt did, some of the things he did, he talked about Noah's Ark and some things in Jerusalem and whatnot. And his presentation was, I think, fairly accurate, but had a little bit of, maybe a little bit more sensationalism to it. This had far less of that. You know, there was a little bit of, hey, these people are coming after us, as they were trying to escape from, because the Saudi government, or I like to hear the Saudi, the government, they fence it off. They don't want people there. And, you know, this has been true for many years because, you know, when Wyatt was there, it was kind of like, no, you can't go here. And you know, you can see the place where there's solid evidence that this is where, golden calf was, the sacrifices occurred. There's a place that fits. There's a place that fits where Elijah went to a cave. You know, it fits. And, you know, the characteristics of Mount Sinai, it fits. And, you know, the one I really find fascinating is the split rock. It's kind of like, this is not a minor structure. It stands out like a lot more than a sore thumb. This thing's huge. And again, what the scripture says, I will stand next to you when you strike the rock. Who stood next to him? I will claim it's Jesus Christ. And so it's kind of like, when that occurred, people noticed. I mean, that is huge. I think it's roughly equivalent to like a 8-story building or whatever. It's huge. But I found it delightful. And one of the things that I really think is, because it's one of the things we discussed today, again, Chris on his vacation. When you look at those kind of things, having the archaeological evidence for the veracity of Scripture, again, as I describe Acts 17, because that's the more personal thing to me, because I've been where it happened. So there, I have an emotional bond. A whole bunch of people go to Jerusalem to find various places. You know, there's, and the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, I think is what it's called. I mean, that's a tourist trap. I mean, it really is. But so you have a lot of this evidence, as I suggested to Chris, you know, the evidence of where Christ was when he came to visit Joseph Smith and go to South America is kind of hard to find, isn't it? You know, because I would contend, reason being, is it didn't happen. But, you know, the things that happened in Athens, the things that happened in so many places, including Syria and so forth, you know, as in Paul on the road to Damascus, and, you know, the city of Damascus is still there. But you have the archaeological evidence, and you can say, look, the Bible's consistent with this. That would give you a weight of evidence that the Bible is true. And that's great. And if that drives you to trust in Christ, great. If it's because of other things. You look at, oh, the Dead Sea Scrolls and so forth, and these kind of pieces of evidence. And if that's the way the Lord convinces you of its truth, great, that works. But, you know, underlying all this, unless the Lord calls you, the evidence doesn't matter. But when the Lord calls you, the evidence of the archaeological evidence, the history, the text and so forth, that's great. But for me, what I find is the consistency. That has really blown me away from Genesis to Revelation. There's a consistency. We were looking today at, because in the struggles of life, the verse we read was Psalm 46:10, be still and know that I am God. But we read the whole Psalm, Psalm 46. But one of the things that stood out, therefore we will not fear though the earth gives way, though the mountains be moved into the heart of the sea, though the waters roar and form, though the mountains tremble at its swelling. What's fascinating is if you have the faith of a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, you know, into the water. you can see a bit of consistency, the same kind of reference. But the other one that, because I've mentioned this in a different context, there is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy habitation of the Most High. God is in the midst of her, and she shall not be moved. God will help when morning dawns, and so forth. But there's a river whose streams make glad the city of God. Where is that river? Revelation 22. Through the middle of the street of the city, flowing from the throne of God. Verse 1. Then the angel showed me the river of water of life, bright as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and the Lamb through the middle of the streets of the city. There's a river whose streams make glad the city of God. That's the river. Psalm 46, Revelation 22, connect. There's a consistency in Scripture. And I would contend, if you think man wrote this book, you're a sucker. I'm sorry. You're simply a sucker. No, It is God-breathed. 2 Timothy 3:16. These are God's words. He's the one who's the same yesterday, today, and forever. He's the one that tells you about the past and the future. The reason he can tell you in the beginning, because he was there. The reason he can tell you about Revelation 22 is because he is in control of this. He is in control of past, present, and future. The plan he has is the plan he set down from the beginning. What we see in Psalm 46 is not, oh, well, what do I do now? It's this plan. It is a consistent document. Our Lord, our Creator, is majestic. He's rather powerful. Again, when, the first words of the Bible, in the beginning, to be able to create time itself, that's power. That is power. I watched Saturday, Sunday, Eclipse of Reason. I saw families. I remember when I used to hold my kids. You know what it's like to be the dad of 9 kids, take your youngest child at 8 months, put him in a car seat, and not see him for 11 years. To have a relationship with a son, George, who says, Dad, I wish we were family again. And when I appeal to him, the cards are censored and returned to me. Censored against man's law and returned to me. Censored against God's law because, there's love now. We don't want to do that. It hurts. But, this finding the mountain of Moses is a reminder. God is who he claims to be. He's shown his grace to me. Because in the midst of all this, he has sustained me. I'm afraid I've made a lot of blunders in the last many months, as I've done in the last many years. But my hope is in him. My hope is in him. He made crush me all the more. But I know he will never let me go. That I have confidence in. When I look at the writings of these groups, al-Nusra or whatever it was, who wrote it at the time, how to deal with female slaves, and the people of the book, it's permissible to enslave her. Jim Cross, you enslaved your daughter, my wife, by pointing her to disobedience to Christ, pointing her to another god, the state. You're mentioned, I would suggest, directly in 2 Timothy 3, leading women astray. I want to reconcile with you. I want to be able to look at you face to face, shake each other's hand, and call each other our beloved brother. But it takes both of us. And I'm not going to give up until one of us is dead or we've reconciled. And then, of course, when you look at the video done in 2017 and then the video in 2018 where the city of Aleppo was celebrating a bit of a rebirth. I mean, the place is still having trouble. But they had a celebration. After all that devastation, they have a celebration. I want that celebration with my own family. So desperately. Because like the people of Idlib, One of those people has been on my wall for years. Because, as I say many times, that man's my brother. When I look at him, the way he was showing pictures of his family, oh, you know, his cell phone over and over, going, this is my kids, this is my kids, this is my kids, this is my wife, this is my kids. And this is them at their church, this is with their pastor and so forth, celebrating that stuff. That man's my brother. He's been ripped apart. But my confidence in the tone I saw of him, in him, the Lord has him. The Lord has me. Does the Lord have Jim Cross, Brenda Keynes, Chris Bitterman? Being part of a religious institution doesn't mean a hill of beans. Does the Lord have you? If so, would you please act in obedience to him and reconcile with your brother? And then, dare I mention, 1 Corinthians 7:11. A wife should reconcile with her husband. Dorothy Jane, again, 1 Corinthians 7 and Romans 7. You're my wife. You're my wife, an adulteress, or dead. It's the only options. I'm alive. You're bound to me. A wife is bound to her husband as long as he lives. And I love, right now I live and I remain 100% in love with my wife. Unlike Shadi Shada, reconciliation and reunification remains on the table. There's the possibility that she's closed the door to reunification because she's an adulteress. I don't know. Obviously, I hope not. But my desire is reconciliation, which can happen either way. And one of the ramifications of reconciliation is she will drop the barrier between my kids and I. She will stop violating man's law and showing me hate, as all these cards on the wall show. Her husband makes a lot of mistakes. But her husband, you know, it's this, it's the politically incorrect thing to be. I'm a monogamous heterosexual. Ooh, bad. And I refuse to be anything else. Just like Angelia Rose Gomez, who fought to protect her children, ignored the state, the dictates of the cowards of the state. I'm striving to live that model. I may blow it on the way. But I'm not going to give up. George, you said you wish we were family again. So do I. George, I told you I was going to hike to the top of Big Frog last weekend. I did. And at the top, I said, Dorothy Jane, I love you. Dorothy Jane, you know, your mom, my wife. What is it going to be like when my kids find out all this stuff? My lady, my wife, I'm not giving up on you. I love you and I want you back.